Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Fran Lewis, and yes, Marcia Cook. Hi, Marcia. How you doing?
Hi. Hello.
And this is my new show. This is supposed to be a very serious show.
I'm here to welcome you to World of Ink.
Thank you. This is the world of surprises. Two people.
Mm-hmm.
We are waiting for the author to call in, and until she calls in, let me explain the difference between this show that I'm doing today and the one that I did yesterday. The title of the show is called Focus Discussions. We're going to focus on different issues that people want to talk about. It does not have to be a novel. It doesn't have to be a book. It can be about anything that goes on in the world. The author that's supposed to be on today is from Liberia. She's a Liberian refugee. Her name is Louise Gadith Barton, and she should be calling in, from what I gathered, in about 10 seconds. She comes from Liberia. She escaped from Liberia. Her gripping memoir, brimming with authenticity, raw emotion, and unyielding faith of more than 10 years, it's called So Far to Run, and the title fits exactly what the book is about. It's about her journey, a true story, coming from Liberia, the tortures that she went through, and what happened when she was living there as a child, and the fact that her mother left her, her father put her with some people, and she's a distant relative of President Samuel K. Doe, who was assassinated during the Civil War in Liberia. She was hunted down as a member of the indigenous Kron tribe, and her story is definitely one that needs to get out, because there are people in the world today that you have no idea the suffering that they're going through in Liberia even today. Is she on the switchboard by any chance? Is she there?
There are a lot of people that we don't know, a lot of things we don't know and we don't hear, you know, and that's really a problem, that, you know, you just don't hear these things. But, you know, people are suffering all over the world in different countries.
Well, this story today,
we take it for granted here. We take it for granted here, all of the liberties that we have, and you don't have that in other countries.
Well, that's why I'm hoping that she's supposed to call in.
Well, they don't have Black Talk Radio, so they might not understand how to do this. It's not that easy.
Well, I don't know.
Sometimes you think, you know, it seems easier than for some people. It's not that easy to get the concept of this.
Yeah, well, we're going to give her a couple of minutes.
Yeah, sure. I'll tell you when she comes on, but it isn't that easy to get the concept. You know, she's not familiar with this, because this is an internet-based show. You don't have to be on the internet. You just have to call in. I have to be on the internet, and if I'm not on the internet, there is no show, or whoever is here, which occasionally what happens is that Blog Talk, you know, we have to call back in.
So that's happening, yeah. We're hoping. Well, Louise's story is told from the heart. She was beaten, tortured, sent to live with some people that her father thought was going to take really good care of her, and turns out that they did not take very good care of her. She became a voice for the people that are in Liberia, and she's done an awful lot to help other people get out. And it took her 10 years to come to America, and I really hope that she can sign in and she calls in really soon, because you're going to want to hear her story.
It's not that easy to get here. You just don't make a decision that you're going to come to America. It's not that easy.
No, she couldn't. She had asked permission from the government. She had asked permission from different places, and she had to wait in different situations in order to be allowed to come here. You can't just say, I want to be here. She had to get permission, visas, it's a whole thing. And she asked for it so many times, and each time she thought she was going to get here. She didn't get here. The second author is Bonnie Verick, and her book, Stovepipe. I mean, if you read either one of these books, you're going to need a box of tissues and probably a lot more. Bonnie's story is about the foster care system and what happens when you have 18 brothers and sisters and you get taken away and you get split up, and till this day I don't think she's very close with maybe more than one or two people, and what happens when the foster care system fails. So the purpose of this show is basically to talk about different issues that people have, so we can talk about child abuse, We can talk about anything on the news that we see. We can talk about the death of Whitney Houston, which is really sad, and her drug abuse and what happens, and kids that wind up with drug abuse and alcohol abuse. We can talk about a book that I just read by Mickey Peluso, which was absolutely fantastic, one of the best memoirs on the Whippoorwill Sing, about what happens when a DWI kills a little girl and practically gets away with it. And that's sad. There's somebody on the line. I can't tell if that's Louise.
No, there's nobody on this line. How can you tell? You can't tell because I'm looking at the switchboard.
I just see that there's a guest there. No, I guess that.
No, it's you and me. That's it. It's you and me. I've had several guests on, you know, with foster care, and I do different issues also. And, you know, I mean, I think what happens is I think that, you know, we're lucky here and that you don't realize that a lot of different problems people have. And in the foster care system now, I think what they do is now you have to be tested. It's not like it was. Because you need to, you just can't say, okay, I want to adopt somebody now. It doesn't work that way.
Foster care system is
not when she was probably. She had 18 brothers and sisters.
18 brothers and sisters that were separated, and each one was placed in a different kind of home. And one of the homes, when Bonnie gets on, the lady's son tried to abuse her. And then when her brother came to live there and realized that he was able to take care of it and protect her, but because the lady wanted to move around and she was sent around to so many different homes, it took an awfully long time for her to get to a place where she felt safe. I just got an email from Kevin that said that Louise is having trouble for some reason calling in. She seems to think that the line is busy, but it's not busy.
It's not busy. No.
There's no such thing
because
as
you can have as many people on. No, you can't. It's not busy.
No, it's not. So just, yeah. I mean, the number is 7-1-4-2-5-2-5-2-5-9. And I did tell Kevin once again to tell her to call in, and something told
did
me
you
that
think,
this
I
was
heard
going
you, when
to
you
happen
him on the phone. But you know, you know what? We'll just talk about. You know, the thing is, when I did the book Salem More Than a Survivor, you know, she was. That's almost like, you know, when everybody was separated. She came home from school, and everybody was gone. There was nobody in her house. I mean, it's like people don't realize like things like this happen. Now, still, and in her case, everybody disappeared, and there she was by herself. They locked the door. She couldn't even go in the house. They boarded everything up. And so she found her parents, like in her mother in the schoolyard. She ran to the schoolyard, but her mother just kept pushing her back. Her mother didn't want her to come with her because she knew where she was going. Sala did not know what was going to happen. And, you know, when I wrote the book, Sala, some people don't, I guess, understand that when I wrote Sala's book, it was told as a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old girl. And that's why I'm changing it to a young adult version now, which will be a shorter version, because I think, the young adult market will like to hear about this because they're learning about it at 13. So I think I'm making a smaller version. You know, I'm going to redo it. And I think that maybe, you know, the kids would read it more, because I know when Sala goes to talk to the Holocaust Museum, when she talks there, the kids are 12 and 13 years old. So I'm going to now gear it toward that and put some different pictures in it. Because people like to read about all these things, you know. I mean, we're lucky here, thank God. But, you know, there are problems, you know, and it just, you can't get to this country. Just, you know,
no, you
everybody.
I mean, they complain about the people that come here, but she was fighting for her life. Like, Sala was fighting for her life. He's just saying, we're just getting a thing from the publicist for some reason. She has the number, and he has no idea what the problem is. So I guess we're going to talk until Bonnie gets on the phone, and if she doesn't, then
maybe you could email her to see if she wants to come in a little earlier.
I don't have the email address. I just told him to tell her to call in now.
Right.
That's what I'm
going to
do.
Yeah.
Well, you know, tell everybody about Sala and tell them about the book. I mean,
the thing about reviewing books is, because you're a reviewer, you know, and I've talked about this a lot of times on my show before. You know, when you do a review, how do you decide if it's going to be 4-star, 5-star? And I know you don't want to give people 2 stars because you just don't feel that that's the right, you know, if it's not good enough for that, you won't give them a review, I think. Is that
That's the case. When I read a book, I read it through the eyes of the reader, the person that's sitting there and reading the words and seeing if I can come up with a message that the author is saying. I don't look at the book to see how many mistakes are in it. I don't look to see if it's edited properly. I mean, if there are a lot of typos and grammar errors, then usually the book will say unedited proof, which means ignore it because we know that already.
Fran, I think somebody's here. Now, what area code was 203? Was
I have
that
no
area
idea.
Code?
Yes. Yeah, okay, maybe. We'll I don't know. That. Louise is calling again.
Hello. Hi.
Louise.
This is Louise Barton.
Oh,
hi. Where are you? Hi. Okay, she got through. Okay, that's good. This is Marcia. There's Fran. Fran, you got it?
Yes. Hi, Louise. It's Fran. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Okay. Now I can actually introduce you the right way.
Oh, no.
I am so excited that you're here. Louise's book, So Far to Run, The Memoir of a Liberian Refugee, I have to tell you, I read it twice and I needed three boxes of tissues by the time I got done. Your story is absolutely amazing, and I am so very, very honored that you're here today. So welcome to my brand new show, Focus Discussions, and I'm here and Marcia's here. So could you tell everybody... What made you want to share your story with everyone? What made you want to tell it?
Well, I will first of all say thank you for having me to speak
with.
My story is an inspiration to all. It's a story of hope. It's a story of encouragement. There are a lot of women and children that are going through a lot of struggle in my country, Liberia, is in West Africa. And I just want to share a little bit, a little thing about the whole book. And So Far to Run is about the more than 10 years I spent on the run for my life, hunted down by rebels. Even the U.S. State Department described the war as a African first bloody war in the whole country of Africa. And in my book, I also mentioned how I traveled over two countries, over 300 miles, and then journey in a boat, a small little boat, over 70 miles on a high sea. And then when I got to the third country where I was going for refuge, I was falsely accused and thrown into prison. And if you read my book, you can also compare it with a movie called Blood Diamond, In the Eyes of a Woman. They are all parallel because I went through that struggle, but I was not going through it alone. I was going through it with the hands of God on my life. So it's a book of encouragement. It's a book of hope. And I tell everybody that listening today that there is no difficulty that you cannot overcome when God is on your side.
I agree with you on that one.
Yeah.
I read the book, and like I said, it's very, very, very moving. And you had your brother with you for some time, right, when you went to live with the Smith family. Why did your father decide that he wanted you to live with them? And exactly who were these people? Because they weren't exactly, Mrs. Smith didn't seem that she liked you very much.
Yeah.
I'm just putting it mildly there. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, the Smith family. And they were considered the most civilized and educated people, and they are from the descendant of the free slaves that was sent to our country during the 1800s, and their generation and their children. And we are very poor, so my father decided that he believed in education, and he felt that education was the best way to better life. And so he sent my brother solo, and then he also took me to go and live with them to be able to be educated, to know how to do all the things that an educated woman would do, like clean a decent house, because in a village where we used to live, there were little huts, and the first time I went to live with Smith, that was the first time I saw television. I was able to see, you know, air condition. So they sent me there to be able to be educated and civilized for a better life.
Yeah, but you didn't exactly get the greeting that you exactly wanted, I know.
Yeah, thank you.
I know. I sat there and I read it. And as I'm reading it, I was rooting for you to get out. And as I'm sitting there and reading it, I said to myself, I want you to take something and hit her over the head with it. I mean, the anger that builds up in you with the atrocities and the things that you went through, it's just amazing how you knew in your heart that you were going to come here and survive. That's just so absolutely fantastic. So there was a whole chapter on your mother. Why did your mother decide to leave? That really hurt too.
Yeah. Yeah, my mother, as a story, as you telling me that you read my book, my mother, she came from a different country in Africa called the Ivory Coast, and she came to marry to my father. But my father, you know, because in Africa they practice polygamy, and my father had a lot of, you know, a lot of wives.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, and so the she was not having the fair taste of story, I guess. So she just have to leave me and go back. And in Africa, if you marry to a man and you the wife want to, and you the woman want to leave, you have to leave the children behind. But it rather broke her heart to leave me behind because she loved me so much. And she just have to take that step to go, to leave me behind.
Yeah, she decided, I know. The book is sitting here right in front of me, by the way. It's been the book is right. You know, there are certain books that I've read so many of them, and I've reviewed so many of them, but there are certain books that when I have to say I was very, very lucky and honored, because when I was sent your book, I was sent your book with like six others by Kevin, and when I saw yours, I said, no, this one is moving to the top of my list. And I emailed him. You know, he doesn't tell me, oh, Fran, this is what I'm sending you, or do you want to read this? He just sends, and that's okay, because he knows I'm going to want to read it. So he sent this one, and with the person that's coming on next that went through the foster care system and went through a similar situation of being abused. So it was really quite a telling and compelling book. So those of you that are in the chat room and those of you that are on the air, if you want to read a really unbelievable memoir that's a true story, it's So Far to Run by Louise Martin, the memoir of a Liberian refugee. And we're going to talk more about it.
And do you want to say where they can buy the book, where they can get the book, you know, on what?
Yeah, they can get the book on Amazon, and they can get it from the website himself, Two Harbors Media Press. And the publisher is Bascom Hill Publishing, but basically you can get it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And this is one book that I definitely think that American kids need to read. And I think that even kids in college should read this to get to understand how lucky they are to be able to go through the educational system here. Because I see, you know, you see kids going to school in the morning and you begin to wonder, like, why aren't they going in the right direction when Louise tried so hard just to get an education, and that's all she ever really wanted. So what helped you get through all of this? What made you so strong and able to survive all the things that you went through? And there was quite a bit if you people read the book.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for just the statement that you just made, that a lot of people have the opportunity in America. Well, what kept me was this steadfast hand of God that was on my life. Because when I gave my life to God, I knew that the burden of love, or yearning for love, I was yearning for love because I was a lonely child and I was a slave girl. So I wanted love so much, and Jesus was the only way and the only, you know, way to get that love. And so when I accepted the Lord Jesus, He was leading me, you know, the Bible said that not everything is going to be easy. But even in the midst of that hardship, He's going to be with you. And when David said, if I lie my bed in hell, my God will be there. And so I was in or doing a hell when I was living with a slave. But I know in all my situation, in all that, you know, difficulty, there was a hand of God that was on my life. And so the faith, my faith, it took me through and led me to where I am today.
Now, do you think that a lot of people, you know, Fran, I was just wondering, do you think, you know, that a lot of people, when they go through a crisis, they start to feel some religious and spiritual mode because of that, that's how they can get through this? Because sometimes you have to have some help spiritually to get to where you are now.
Well, some people, I always want to speak for myself, but as you ask the question, some people, they go through other spiritual means to be able to get out of the situation, and then they go back to what they want to be. But from the time I knew the Lord, I knew it would not be an easy road, but I kept on moving because the Lord told me, he said, Louis, you have to do it. One step at a time, you can make it. And I have that hope, and that strong hope I will hold into that inspiration to say, I will make it. I will make it. And that hope kept me all the long way where I am today. So.
Well, I could feel it as I was reading the book.
Yeah.
And I could feel that you were not going to give up until you got what you wanted. And after a while, you became a spokesperson for everybody else that was there. So there are a few people in the book that maybe you would share with us. Who was Moses? Who was Cecilia? And who was Janet?
Okay.
Our listeners.
Okay. Moses and Cecilia, they were fellow refugees, and they came over to Abel and I. Abel is my husband. And they came over to Abel and I for us to make the journey to where we went to the place called Lunke Airport. Mm-hmm. It's a place across the Atlantic. You have to ride a little ferry to get there. And we were going there when Freetown was attacked. And so they came and begged, you know, of us, can we go along with us because there is no hope for us? And we said, Abel and I, we are just servants who love to serve people. We said, okay, we can go. And so we went to Lunge, and they were with us all through, from Lunge to Guinea until we came to America. So they are fellow refugees that traveled with us to Lunge and then to Guinea. And with Janet, she was a fellow refugee also that I met when I was in a little town called Bo. It's in Sierra Leone, and at that time I was pregnant with my son that passed away. And so she was there, you know, when they took me in because I was with the father of the son family. And so she was there. She also came from Liberia too, and she was also a refugee. So when I saw her, I took her to be a bigger sister, and she was there to help me through until I had the baby. But the baby finally passed away.
I know that was... You were a distant relative, right, of the president? Liberia, How did that work for you or against you?
That was for me. the question had A and B. It had part one and part two. The good part, I was able to go with my aunt Sarah to go to the presidential palace, and
I remember that.
She gave me some money, and when I saw the palace, oh my God. I was thinking I was in America. I was in America already because the place was so beautiful. Because that was my first time. Yeah. And then she gave me some money that helped me out to pay some fees, and I gave the rest of the money to Mrs. Smith. And the bad part is because she's from the Crown tribe, and we were the tribe that was hunted down because it belonged to the tribe that was president at that time until the rebel came and overtook Liberia. So we were hunted down like animals. Nobody would come and rescue you. Nobody would come and save you. Like people go to people's houses and begin to open a door. From house to house, hunted down. We see any crime there, everybody had to be killed. Some people go to store when knew that crown person was living there. They would go and put people on a gunpoint. So being the niece to the first lady, it was another big thing for me too.
That is absolutely horrendous. That's horrendous. So when you decided to write this book, there was definitely this the message that you wanted to get to everybody to make them understand. Now, today, I mean, as far as in Liberia, has it changed much or is it still the same?
Well, it changed a little. It changed a little because we have a president, which is a lady, Helen Johnson-Sirleaf, and she ran for the first term, and then she just ran again for the second term, and she won, and she just got, you know, they just have the inauguration. And but there are a lot of things to be done in Liberia. And I'm also the voice. I'm also going around do crusading to help people because there are a lot of people, like myself, that were in through, you know, through the struggle, and some people are still in the refugee camps. They cannot go back to Liberia, and because they don't have who to go to, even though Liberia is a country. But Liberia now, there are people that are suffering no rehabilitation. Some people need school for their children to go. Some people need hospitals. Some people need mosquito nets. Some people need well to be dug. There are a lot of things to be done in Liberia. So, you know, I'm blessed to be in America, but my heart is behind because I went through the situation for 10 years, and some people are still going through it today, and I've been in America for 11 years now. So just imagine, for 21 years, people are still suffering in the same situation. They will see a woman have a, you know, she's pregnant, and there are no medical, you know, way to even see any doctor, and that woman will have a baby right in the village and no vaccination. All the things they are burning on my heart, and I pray, and I know God will bring it to pass. And I pray every day that someday I will, because my mother blessed me already when she said you will have long life and the hair on your head to be white. And so I pray for that long life that I live to someday be able to give somebody a helping hand. Yeah.
So if you wanted to help them now, I mean, what would you have to do in order to help them? Even though you're here, what kind of help would they need? I mean, this new president, what is she able to do to help the people to make it better, or isn't she strong enough?
Okay, well, from the time I came in America 11 years, since I've been working as a certified nursing aide, every year I say my tax return and send back to Africa for December for people to eat for Christmas. And they buy, you know, goats, they buy sheep, they buy cow. And people eat and, you know, kill the cow and divide a little pieces of the meat. And they pray and pray God. Say, Louis, well, we can't just imagine because there are times while we are throwing food away, there are other children that are going to sleep without food. So every year for the past 11 years, I've been doing that, you know, I do it in Sierra Leone, I do it in Guinea, I send shoes, I send clothing, anything. The thing we have here that is not good for us in Africa is the best. So I do that. And so my husband and I went on, we bought a land. We are still paying for the land and going to finish in April. We bought a piece of land and we're planning to build schools, to build orphanage, to have clean water and other things, but one hand cannot do it. So for the president, she's doing her part, but she cannot do it all. We also need to contribute. You know, that is why the world go round, because we went through that to see a little child without clean water. It breaks my heart when my children drink, and they are having school buses to come and take them. And there are other children without education, and my father believes in education. So, yeah.
Your father did believe in education, and your brother believed in education too, right? I know your family does. I know it was my grandfather came here from Ellis Island and sold apples on a street corner until he could support a family of five. And it's horrible. My grandmother was in concentration camps before she came here. So I mean, it's amazing what the strength.
Yeah, people, everybody, when they came here, when they come here, they have to do jobs that they have to live to eat.
Just to live,
so they
but kids today don't
not,
realize
right.
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
People today don't realize it. They're just how difficult it really is. But what you want to do for your country is just so amazing. It's absolutely amazing. So where is your brother now, and what is he doing?
My brother Solo is in Liberia now, and he's just doing, you know, a little, you know, from hand to mouth job. I mean, to just get something to feed a family, even though I send also to help them. Yeah, but, you know, for one person, it's not easy. So I always give them hope and encouragement. And when I send a book to him, to Liberia, and when he read it, boy, he cried. And every day he called me, he cried. He said, oh, Louis, I tell God, thank you for sparing your life, for you to be able to tell our story, because the story is for both of us. And to also tell the story that our father was yearning for its education. And today he is also educated, and I'm also educated. At least we can live, we can be so survival to be able to other people, how they need to be, you know, to appreciate him, because there are billions and trillions of people.
You're right.
That don't have opportunity, but we are blessed to be in the first part of the world. America and all of part of it, even those who are listening right now, to be, you know, we are blessed. It's just God, we are blessed. There are people today, you know, they don't have even food. Some people in my country just live on $500 for the whole year. You know,
The Red Cross in America never ever offered to help, or any of the agencies here never offered to help the people
Red Cross
over there.
Probably. Red Cross.
I mean, we've had so many, you know, they help everybody here. I'm surprised that they didn't reach out to help your country and people that really need it over there. And after reading this book, I mean, how can anybody turn their back on the fact that this is happening? I can't imagine that the U.S. government or anyone like Oprah or the Red
Cross.
Sometimes
when they come here, like when you come here, they give you help, the Red Cross. Sometimes when you're here, they give you, they offer it here sometimes too.
Yeah, well, they offer the medical. Did they
offer
you help here when you came here? Did they give you medical care? Did they give you any kind of government services to help you, you know, to live?
Yeah, when we first came here, we were having food stamps. They gave us food stamps and other things.
That's good.
So, and so when we got our jobs, so the food stamps were taken from us, which, of course, we all know, because we're earning something now. So they help us a lot. They help us for almost a year, you know, for us to get on our feet, you know. But there are other organizations, like I went on to open non-profitable organization, and I just got approved in November of last year, a 501c3. And there are other things that will be done in not only Liberia. There are people in Sierra Leone. There are people who have been amputated because the rebel go and cut their hands, cut their limbs, cut their feet, cut their hands. So those people, they need rehabilitation. They need, because the people are traumatized. And so those people need somebody to talk to them. So I just pray, and that's my hope and prayer, that people just volunteer. People can volunteer in many ways. You can do it, you know, physically. You can do it psychologically. And you can go, you know, and donate something. And some people can even appear to go, with me if they're willing to go. And so we just help, you know. But to me, I'm a person who loves to serve people. So by helping people, it just brings joy and love to my life. So I just need volunteers, I need people, you know, I need tools. You cannot work without the tools. You need all the help, because there are people that are dying every day without food.
I know.
You know, people dying. You know, it's so sad. Yeah.
They don't have an organization to send food over. I mean, I hear that, you know, these different organizations and phone numbers on television send this, send that, and we're going to send the food over. I just wonder if they really do send it. They don't have anything like that in Liberia, and the president hasn't done something like that, you know, where people can actually donate and send money and help the people over there. And your brother doesn't want to come here, or isn't he able to come here?
Yeah, for the line of donation, there are other organizations too, but they are not much, because they have to take care of Sierra Leone, they have to take care of Liberia, they have to go to Guinea. You know, the country is just at war. There are a lot of organizations you can find, but if you live the life that I live, and you want to just go and just get the people just handshake. If you even hold somebody, just give them a hug, the person they are blessed for the day. So I just need people with a heart, with a human heart. And when I came to America, I was so wounded in my heart. But when I entered the land called America, and when I was in the air, and then when I looked down, I saw the Statue of Liberty. And she was standing on a harbor. She was so bold and welcoming me and my family on the land. And when we landed, in the car, and I begin to say, free, free, I'm free, Jesus, I'm free. And those people that went for us, our people, the white people that came to us, they were embracing us. And that love, that one the people are yearning for, the love, you know, the love more than everything. More than millions and trading on the love, because they just need love. They need somebody to just care for them. You know, so that love just turned my life forever. I saw good people with kind heart, they came. I measured some of them in my acknowledgement, in my book. They welcomed me to teach me the American food, the culture, the English, because our English is different.
it seems to be when people come here, though, that, you know, the Statue of Liberty just means so much to everybody, you know, and I think that's a standard. People are so happy to be here when they see that Statue of Liberty, that then you know you're free, and that seems to be the best thing in the world to see. Because, you know, we take it for granted, a lot of this, but we do whatever we do. But when you're not from here, you don't have all of the freedoms that we have. And it's just that Statue of Liberty means that for everybody, I think. You know, that's what, Fran, you're saying your grandparents, mine did too. They came to Ellis Island, and it seems to be, and I did a Holocaust survivors, you know, Sally's book. And when she saw the New York, I mean, when you come here, to New York, I mean, well, I'm not in New York, but when you get to New York and you see that Statue of Liberty, you could take a deep breath and say, I'm here, you know, and that's really...
Go on.
I took a deep breath and I said, oh, God bless America.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So what's the most wonderful thing that's happened to you since you've written the book and since you've been here? Because those people that are listening in the chat room, and those people that might be listening and we don't know that you're here, the name of the book is So Far to Run, and Louise Barton's book is a true story about her life in Liberia, which was horrible, and about how wonderful it is that she's here in America now. And I'm looking at the back of the book, and I'm going to tell you her website is sofartorun.com if you want to send her an email or you want to contact her. Or you want to really help by buying the book so that, you know, we can help more people in Liberia. And I'm reading the last page. See, I'm telling you, the book is sitting in front of me all this time. And you did say at the end, I was no longer a tired servant or a poor refugee huddled in hiding. I was at long last free. That must have been the best feeling. But how did you feel when you got off that plane for the first time and stepped on American soil?
I think I need to share a little joke.
Go ahead.
When the plane landed, I went straight in Africa. The plane landed on a field, and you have to walk to go to immigration. But with us, when we landed, we were right in the terminal. We were right in the house, in the terminal. So I held my other son. I begin to tell my husband, I said, oh, where are we? Where is the plane? You know, I was confused because that is the first time. So the people just looking at us, you know, and then the IOM, the Immigration Organization for Migration, the agent came over and said, Louis, come on, let's go. Your sponsors are outside waiting for you. I was like confused. I don't know. I said, in the house. They said, yes, you are in the house. You are in the house. Because in Africa, no plane coming down. You have to walk from the field. So I said, but where is the plane? They said, the plane already brought you, and you are in the, you know, you are in the immigration center. So I was crying because I knelt down. Everybody was looking at me. I was kissing the ground of America. How blessed the ground is. I was kissing the ground, and everybody on the airport, everybody so busy, passing. They were looking at me. I said, what happened to the girl? But I was kissing the ground. I knew what I was doing, but they don't know. Because this one
they don't
is
know
what
it's so amazing and so wonderful to know that you really are just so happy here and that you are blessed to be in America. And it's just a pity that everyone doesn't realize that. You know, like I said, my grandfather came here from Ellis Island. My grandmother was in the Polish concentration camps, and what was done to her was horrific. And the fact that, you know, you just learn to overcome whatever happens to you before is just is just so amazing. So your mind just kept you strong, and you just refused to give up. So this is going to be a kind of thing. This Mrs. Smith can't possibly still be alive. She can't possibly be still alive in Liberia. She must have. She wasn't that young, was she? That
who?
Family. The family that you lived with. They're are they still there? You know, those people
the husband is dead, and the wife is still there. And guess what? She called me now. Oh, Louis, how you doing, my beloved daughter? I said, oh, gosh. Yeah, I'll forgive
you. Yeah, right. Uh-huh. And what do you answer her? Like, goodbye, and I don't really have much to say. She really, in her own mind, thinks that she did a wonderful thing for you, doesn't she?
Yeah.
In her own mind, she doesn't see what she did, does she?
Well, everybody have conscience, so I guess you know what she did. Yeah, so by the
you
first
they,
time when
you
I...
You hope they have a conscience, right? You hope they have a conscience,
that's what I'm saying, because if you read the book and you see some of the horrific things that she did, and then she locked you out and she wouldn't let you come back in because she knew that you belonged to that tribe. Has she ever said she was sorry?
Well, yeah, she said she was sorry because when I came to America and I called her that I was here, and then she was so shocked, and she was crying, and she said, Louis. And then when she was shocked, she was like, stuck on the phone for a few minutes, and I began to preach a little bit to her, and taking from the book about the story of Joseph. I said, Ma, don't be astonished. Don't be surprised. I said, the devil meant it for bad, but God turned it for good. I said, if I left to your house, I must be there by now, because there's no way when the rebel came to your house, you will let me to be there for you to say, oh, you cannot take Louis away. I will surely be there. You will get me out. But God allowed you to say, for your daughter to say, I took your person, and then for God to make your heart so strong that you cannot forgive me to come back in the house. So the devil, God was using all this for my survival, for me to be able to be a living testimony. So when every time I talk to her, I preach. So when I talk to her, she said, Louis, forgive me. I said, Ma, you are forgiven. I said, God, the devil meant it for bad, but God turned it for his glory. Yeah.
Well, you can only forgive so much. You lived in the camps for a while, right?
Yes.
In Liberia. And what was the organization that helped you to finally get here? How did you finally get to America? Who helped you finally?
When we went to the refugee camp, we were under the auspices of United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. They called it the UNHCR. And that was, they guided us until we were in Sierra Leone for 7 years and 7 months until the Sierra Leone rebel came and ran us out of Sierra Leone, and then we had to get on a little boat, as I said before, over 70 miles on a high sea. My husband was so sick. I went to our third country called Guinea, and when we got there, we were falsely accused and were thrown into jail. And it was so horrible. So, well, from that jail, we went to the UNHCR, and there we met a guy called John, who were beating us. But John is not a real name. I just used the name to seal the innocent, because he had a real name, but he was working for the United Nations too as a local employee. But he was too much. He beat my husband up, and God sent another person to intervene, a friend of ours from school called Lillian Cole, and she came in and took over. God used her to for other diseases.
That's just so amazing. It's just so amazing. And your story is not quite done yet. So did you ever think, when you wrote this book, how long did it take you to write it? How long did it take you to write so far to run?
7 years.
7 years, I can imagine.
Yeah. When I write, I put it down. I cry. Every time I write, I cry. I pray.
Yeah.
Every time I write, I cry because it was so hard for me to put it down, for me to write this book. It was too hard for my life, especially for my mom. For the way the rebel treated me when I was beaten in a place called Gopher. And I was pregnant at that time, and they broke my teeth. And right now, I'm using dangers. They broke my teeth. They beat me up. And that time, there was no law and order. So every time I think about those things, they just bring back memories. But when they go, healing hands, but hitting my heart, yeah, well, really. It's a hard thing to write. So.
I know, but do you ever think that maybe you're going to write the next part of your story, the good part, and how wonderful it is to be here, so that it's an encouragement to other people to know that you've survived and the wonderful things that you're doing here? Would you write the next part?
Yes, I would surely do that. I'm praying that the first book that came out, it would be like, in the wildfire to sell. Selling is one thing, but the message that is in the book, that will matter.
Yeah.
So, and when it's so, and God gave me, I pray every day for God to bring divine hands, to bless people's pockets, to bless people to just work with me, so to be able to get the resources, because without the help, I cannot do it alone, because my heart, every day, my heart bleeds. And they bleed all the time to say, other people, I'm sleeping on our air condition, but there are other people in the bushes, in the refugee camps.
Mm-hmm.
There are other people that die on the street. They don't have a place to sleep. And I have a child with special need. And this child, I see other people in Africa, they don't even have, they are almost 20 years, 30 years, they are crying on the bottom because they don't have a chair to sit in. It just breaks. Oh, God, it just breaks my heart. I want to do more when God gave me the life and the resources with the help of other people. I'm appealing to people all over the world, and even those that are listening under my voice today. If there's any way God can touch you, just be your help. There are people that need help around the world. There are only in Africa. There are people in South America. There are people in other parts of the world.
Everywhere,
They need help.
Yeah, but you know what? They read stories like yours. It's a really beautiful thing to hear someone that's done what you've done, and that really is inspiration by itself, because this is showing that through hard, listen, it's not easy what you did, but you did it, and that you should be so proud of yourself that you got here, because it's not easy to get here, and to write a book, and to have a life like you're having, which is. So now people will read your book and feel that they can do certain things that they never thought they could do.
Yeah.
Well, I really hope everybody reads her book. Is there a local television station where you are that if you called them to tell them, maybe they would interview you, like a local television station in where you are, or a local radio station that you can contact to tell them about the book and tell them about yourself, and maybe they can get the word out there?
Yeah, I'm thinking about doing that to a lot of them in Georgia. I live in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah.
So we are looking to that. We are also looking into that, Because
you should. You should. Because this is an important story and people need to hear it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, these are the stories that are very important because, and there are people, actually this does go international. The radio show does go into different countries. So they can hear things, just about, inspiration, because there are still people in, like you said, lots of countries that cannot get out.
Yes.
There are a lot of people in the chat room. Does anybody that's listening that has a question, please feel free to put your question in the chat room, because we would be more than happy to answer it. Louise will answer it. The title of her book is So Far to Run. It's a true story. It's about her life in Liberia, what she went through, and all that she went through to get here to America. So what are you doing here now that you're here and everything? What you and your husband are trying to get some help for the people that are in Liberia, and you're doing other things too. And if people want to volunteer, and if people want to send money, and you want to contact you, it will be sofartorun.com is her website.
Yeah.
And for those of you that read the book, make sure that you have a large box of tissues next to it, because it's a very, very, very dramatic and telling story. I know that I was, like I said, I was blessed and honored to receive Louise's book from her publicist to read it and review it, but I definitely would have read it anyway, because once I saw what it was about and once I started to read the book, I have to be honest, everybody knows that I read really fast, but I sat down and read your book, and I could not put it down. And I had no idea. I could not put it down. And I mean, I just sat there and I said to my husband, said to me, don't you want to go to, I said, no. I said, she's got to get out. She's got to get to America. And I have to read what happens. And I'm not going to stop reading it until I finish the very last page.
Well, on her website,
Fran,
on her website, she does have some chapters, so they can look through the website and see some of the chapters in her book, and then they can buy it that way, because she does have some chapters in the book that they can read, and I'm sure once they start reading this, they'll get, you know.
Yeah,
they'll
you're not going to want to stop until you read it. Then you're going to want to write letters to congressmen. You want to write letters to Obama. You want to ask him, you know, where is he? Where is he, and why isn't he helping?
Well, sure, you know, you can't really, you know, the thing is, you don't really know that they're not helping, because, you know, like the Red Cross does do things that, you know, they do a lot of things, so maybe they are helping. We don't know that, you know, because the Red Cross usually goes to everybody and does something, hopefully.
Yeah, after you read her story, you're going to hope that they do a lot more than something. So when you came
Well, that's
here,
why it's important to do books like this, so people can, you know, because this shows that we are a free company, you know, free country,
Amen.
And that people can.
Amen. Amen.
Because you
can get things done. You're so right. But before we
finish school and everything else, that's an inspiration to finish school. You know, I think also it would probably be a good idea if maybe you can go to schools and you know, because a lot of kids, you know, they think they don't have to finish school. You know, and when you know that you had to go to school here and finish it, you really wanted to, because your father evidently believed in education. So that would be a place also that schools might want, you know, that would be inspirational for you to go to schools and talk to some of these kids that think they don't need an education.
Yeah, I would think high schools would be great.
Definitely.
And what about church groups, Sunday school groups and church groups, Sunday school groups where the kids talk about God and this, and they can understand your story. Sunday school groups would be great. And like Marcia
and
said,
college classes.
Yeah, the history, history classes. Yeah, they definitely do need this. As a matter of fact, I mean, it's really sad that our kids today in America don't realize sometimes that just how lucky they really are. I mean, I meet a group of kids every single morning in the bakery, and they're the most politest girls, high school girls, going to Maria Regina High School here up in where I am, and it's amazing. Good morning, how are you? And I looked at them and I said, it's just such a pleasure to be able to talk to you, to know that you're so polite, and each morning they come in to get whatever they're getting, and it's just so great that they actually appreciate going to school and they want to go in the right direction, which is unusual. So that message really needs to get out there. We have
definitely.
Bonnie Vera coming in, but I want Louise to tell everybody one more time the message that you're trying to get across to people when you wrote this book, and why you wrote it, so that everybody understands that this is really a very powerful and very, you said in your book, I meant to ask you, you had visions on how did these visions help you save others and yourself from harm? You said that you saw things.
Yes. Accepted the Lord, and at that time I was doing things that God wanted me to do, pray, read Bible, do teach Sunday schools. At that time I didn't realize that God had a special gift on my life. It's a special gift. So I begin to start dreaming dreams. And even before they walk into Liberia, I dreamed that the water was running on the street of Liberia. And when he gave me a dream, he gave me the interpretation before the dream ends. Even when you dream now and tell me, Louis, I dreamed last night, I saw this, and God will give me the interpretation of your dream. And so people start knowing that, and from there, my eyes begin to open to see things. Like sometimes I would be praying, I would see the hands of, you know, like a hand. God would just begin to show me things like television screen. I would just begin to see, I would just begin to hear the voice, you know, this thing to be done, this need to be done. Some people look at it and say, oh, what is that? But it's just a special calling, it's a gift from God, it's a special gifting that God put onto my life. So when we went to Lunge, and there was a time we went to church, and God spoke to me in the church after all the drinking and all the dancing, and the Spirit of God moved among us, and the Spirit of God just fell onto me, and I stood up, and it said, is anybody who had testimony? And I said, oh, yes, I do. And I stood up, when I stood up, and the Spirit of God began to talk to me, said there would be a war within 3 days. You have to tell my people, but they all would be saved. And so when I told them, they were astounded. They said, what you trying to say? What is that? What you trying to say? But every time God gave me vision, he gave me interpretation, he gave me message, he gave me the answer. So that is a gift that I have. And all over the world, people call me to interpret their dreams. Mm-hmm. And all over the world, people call me to pray for them. And so I just blessed to be alive, to be somebody that somebody can call upon to pray. And the message that I have today for all the listeners under my voice, to please be grateful for everything that you have, because there are people that don't have what you have. As friend was saying, that children go to school, and they are all happy young girls. Yes, there are other people, you know, in America, school buses come to your house. But in my country, you have to walk miles and miles without, it's not that you don't even wear shoes to go to school, but we'll stay young for the education. We still grieve, we still cry to God, please, God, we want to make it. We want to be educated, we want to be civilized. So there are no struggle that you cannot overcome, and there are no anything that with faith that you cannot succeed. Because if you begin to fail to say, oh, this is the end of me, that's the time you are about to step into action. That is the time you are about to step into faith. And with faith, all things are possible. And so that God gave me faith and passion and vision that God gave unto me. I also appealing to everybody who listening to me today. It's a personal appeal from me. So please also go to my own email, louisgbaden@yahoo.com. Louis with a G and baden@yahoo.com. So, you know, if you want to donate, anything, if you want to just be a blessing, if you just want to be a help, your old clothes is somebody new clothes. Your old shoes is somebody new shoes. Your old pocketbook is somebody new pocketbook. Mm-hmm. Anything where you feel, it's somebody new thing. So you can also contact me on my cell phone at 203-512-3866. So this is a message.
And on your website also, if they go on the website, they can see the contact, you know, Louise, and then they can contact a few other people if they need to, you know, if they want to contact you about clothes and things like that. That it's on the, so in case they didn't write it down, it's on your website.
I'm going to put this in the chat box, you know, and I'm going to put it on my Facebook wall in a few minutes too, because you know what? I clean out my closets constantly, and I clean out things constantly. And you're not that far away. You're in Connecticut. Yeah, Marcia knows when I moved here, I cleaned out my closet. And when my mom died, I wish I had known about this book before. My mom died in March, and we cleaned out. Yeah, I lost six people this year. So this is why your story. This is why your story meant so much. I lost my sister, my mother-in-law, my mother, two aunts, and a best friend. And you got to keep your faith, and you have to keep strong. Otherwise, you know what? It's whatever it is that's overtaking you and other people. You can't worry about that. You have to keep your mind active and strong, and you have to say to yourself, "I can do it one more day, I'm going to help." That's right. And you did, and you can. So what's one more thing? Is Bonnie here?
there by any chance? Is there another person on the line?
No.
Not yet. Okay, I'm not going to worry about it. She should be eventually.
I think it's wonderful to write messages like this and books like this, because this is what people need to hear. You know, because it just helps other people, even if it's, you know, if it's some inspiration. People need to read inspirational books, I think, because this way they realize that life is good and they can, it's hard work what you did, but you did it.
Yeah.
And that's
the
most important thing, that she did it. And that shows other people that they can do it.
Yep.
You know, and whatever their trials and tribulations are, they can have a life.
Yes.
They just don't, you know, sit there. I mean, that's really important, especially for women to realize that they have a voice.
Yes.
That is so true.
Yes.
When you live there before Bonnie comes on, they treated, it didn't matter whether you were a man or a woman, it was everybody got the same treatment, correct? It didn't matter. I mean, they didn't care, you know, whether it was who or anyone. If they were going to get you from that tribe, no matter what, it was everyone. So if you could do one more thing, if you could change one thing today, what would you change? If you could just do one more thing that you want to do, what's the one thing that you want to do that you haven't done yet?
If I'm thinking about doing one more thing, what we want to do is that God made every man equal, and we have to live in harmony.
Yeah.
We have to live in harmony. Because when they hit wrecking on crown, because crown was president and what have you, but God made us on that land called Liberia, and we have to live there, whether you crown or you different tribe, we all have to live in harmony. And with that,
right.
We can make it because
that's the best message ever, because that is the truth.
That is a perfect message, and
it's a perfect message.
This is February, and this is Brotherhood Month. This is Brotherhood Month. So for those of you that don't know that February in every school is Brotherhood Month, and it should be Brotherhood Month every single day of the week, and everybody should get along. And for those of you that never heard the message of Dr. Martin Luther King, I was honored when I went to college, and I'm not that old, so I'm not going to make myself feel bad, but when I went to college, I did get to see him in person. That with President Kennedy. Yeah, my professor was doing the movie King, and he took us there, and we got to see Dr. King. And, you know, he was the most amazing man, and the person that killed him, well, there's not words enough to say the horrible thing that he did, but killing him and President Kennedy. But Martin Luther King had a special place in everybody's heart. So for those kids out there that if you're not sure who he is, and I'm sure you are, didn't have the honor of being able to grow up knowing Dr. King, you need to follow his dream. And he always believed in nonviolence.
I think they teach
and
that
understanding.
Now. They teach that now, too. Fran, don't they teach
they
that
do.
Now? I think they do that. You
yeah,
know?
They do.
I think
you know,
Black History Month, too. You know, I think they do.
Jill, in January 15th is Martin Luther King. Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
But you know what? Unless they really watch the movies and unless they really hear what they're saying, the kids really don't know today who the Black Americans are or who just the Americans are. I mean, we did Black history,
exactly.
We did women's history, and maybe Louise needs to go down on women's history. Maybe she needs to be one of those people that actually was in Wikipedia in March to be in women's history, because what she's done is just so absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
So if there's anybody listening out there, I'm telling you that this book belongs on the bestseller list, and I don't say that very lightly, because Marcia knows I don't give 5 stars very lightly when I'm reading a book. I'm kind of tough.
And, you know, these are the books, right? These are the books that should be out there, because these are the books that can make a difference in people's lives.
Yeah.
And that's why schools and, you know, you're saying churches, synagogues, whatever, they should have as many people as they can that have done things like this, because there's never too much said about these things. We need to have more and more and more, because a lot of people are afraid to do things and they don't know that other people before them have done this. And it will make them feel better, you know. And I think that's really, I agree with you. I think this is so important to get out there. And everybody is created equal. But I think this is the problem. People don't believe that. But I do believe that. I was raised that way, and that's how I believe.
Yeah, me too.
Know.
I'm trying to get it in.
Can I say one more?
I'm too,
You go say whatever you want. You can say anything you want.
I feel so blessed and loved. Yeah, I'm also praying that someday their book will turn into a movie. So when there's somebody
good for you.
There's somebody out there who's listening. It's a script writer and want to just read it and feel that there are people that can play that movie. That someday they will see that movie and know there's a hope. There's a hope. There's a light.
I think if the book gets out there, somebody will want to do a story like this. You have to have somebody that's dedicated that wants to really get this done. And unfortunately, it costs money to make a movie. And that's why they need to take more people's books and make them into movies, because these are the thoughts of people that should be out there. It can never be enough of these movies.
5259
Hopefully they'll pay attention. Hopefully they will. Well, you're out there. You got the book, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, good for you. All things are possible.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I don't see the other author here. She's not on yet, right? And I just left her a message. So we're going to give her a couple more minutes, and then if she doesn't get here, then you know we'll see what happens. But I want to thank you so much, Louise.
Yes, thank you very much.
I want to thank you so much. And I don't know if you have my email address, but you can email me at gabina49@gmail.com. gabina49@gmail.com. And you can email me anytime, and if there's anything you want to know, my mother was
Louise's book is also on an e-book. It's an e-book, too. You can buy it from Amazon.
Yes,
download
it on Amazon, probably, and that would be really great, and maybe Kevin
can, for those of you that don't realize it, that if they don't have e-books, I think one of the things people don't realize is when you don't have an e-book, you can still use your computer. You can just download it, and you can read the book on any type of e-readers or the computer. So it's available. And then we do have, I think our next guest is here.
She's here.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for having me.
Louise, thank you so very, very much.
It was very nice
meeting
you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay,
good luck.
You.
Keep doing what you're doing.
God bless. Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Bonnie?
Thank you. We want me to bring, Bonnie up?
Yeah.
Okay, ready?
She's amazing. She's amazing.
Okay, Bonnie?
Bonnie?
I think so.
Yes.
Yeah, there she
is.
Can
you hear me?
Hi, Bonnie.
Yes.
Hi, it's Fran and Marcia. Hi, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, Fran. So nice to talk to you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you okay. This is Fran and Marcia. And Bonnie's book, Stovepipe, was the other book that I read that required 3 boxes of tissues, too. Kevin is a very special person. Louise Martin was just on the show, and Kevin sent me her book and your book the same day. And the problem was this: I didn't know whose book to read first. I'm an educator by trade, and when I read your book, and I read Stovepipe, and I read about the foster care system, and I've dealt with children in the foster care system, and Marcia has too, I was incensed. Totally incensed. So I'm going to ask you the same thing, not the same things that I asked Louise, but what made you decide to share your story with everyone? What made you write it?
I just thought it was a very compelling story that had to be told because there is so much neglect and child abuse out there.
Yeah.
And when I read that 6 children a day die from child abuse in the United States, it's enough to make your blood curdle. It's unbelievable. And I thought that this was a story that had to be told because nothing has changed in the foster care system. I was listening I was listening to a broadcast with Rosie O'Donnell when there were 2 twin girls, 13 years old. And, of course, I have a twin. They were stealing from the garbage and from their children's lunch bucket. And authorities were called in, and they were asked to raise their shirts, and there were lash marks across their back. And I just threw up my hands and said to my husband, nothing has changed in 40 or 50 years. It's still the same.
People are always afraid. They're afraid to talk. That's why they don't want to say anything.
They are. Children have this invisible wall of fear that keeps them hostage. and they're afraid to tell anything, just like we were afraid to tell because our sisters would be taken away from us. There's always some threat lying over their head. And I recently heard Elizabeth Smart speak and how she said that they threatened to kill her parents if she ran away. Well, that invisible wall of fear that people don't realize exists.
I understand. As an educator, we are told that if you suspect anything, and I did, if you suspected anything, you reported it. And if you didn't, you were in big trouble. And I've had girls, boys too, that came in and said, oh, look at the marks on my arms. And in 10 seconds, I reported it. And you know what? It didn't even dawn on me that anything would happen to me because I was so worried about what was happening to them. And more educators and more people out there, you need to report it. And you need to not be afraid because you could be saving somebody's life. And if you don't, we have a couple of more Nick's Mary Browns that died because, or, you know, Lisa Steinberg's and things like that that happened years ago. So your story was very compelling. And you had, I'm trying to remember, 18 brothers and sisters, or was it 19?
18 brothers and sisters.
18 brothers and sisters. Wow. And the day they came and separated you, that must have been horrible.
That was a horrible feeling. I was only 4 years old, and I didn't know what to expect. I mean, I was you're just numb. You're numb. You just feel like Alice in Wonderland falling down a rabbit's hole. You don't really know what to expect.
Yeah.
And it's just a horrible feeling.
Well, you were in many different homes. Were there any homes or any people that you remember that were really kind to you?
Yes, the Millers were kind to us.
I remember that,
I felt very sad when we had to be taken away from there because they were moving to Toronto, and that was not that was out of the jurisdiction of the Norfolk County area, and that was very heartbreaking to be taken away from that family and then be placed in this other family that was the most horrible family that we lived with, where we were abandoned, we were locked away in our attic bedrooms. Not allowed to eat with the family, didn't even know what the inside of the house was, right? Didn't even know there was a flushing toilet in there. And
oh, my God.
It was just feelings of abandonment, and we got beaten so badly whenever they suspected we were doing something wrong.
What did
child
services do?
It's so scary. It's very scary for a kid. I mean, and you know, and especially when some children are always in foster homes all the time. They don't realize there's another type of family out there. They think that might be normal in some families. You know, they're not used to having good parents or food or not be locked away.
Mm-hmm. No, we actually didn't know that maybe other kids were treated like this too. And yet we did, because sometimes I would visit with the girlfriends and with a girlfriend of mine. And I watched as her mother tied her. I'd go to her lunch, to her place at lunchtime, and I'd watch as her mother would tie her bow and give her a kiss and a cookie. And I just felt so neglected, and I wanted so badly to have a mother just like her, just like she had.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah.
That you would. But Betty is your sister, right?
Betty
was your sister.
Yeah.
What role did social services play? Did they do anything when they came and saw you? Because they checked on you, but not really. And you got lost in the foster care system. A lot of kids get lost in the foster care system.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
I've seen it. I mean, I fought with agencies when I was teaching.
Yeah.
And one of them, I threatened to call the news, and I said, if you dare to take this child away from the foster parents and to return the child to the mother that's getting out of jail, I said, I'm going to bring it to the media. And I was able to save the child until the child graduated my school and went into junior high school. And then I called the junior high school, and I said, this is the story. You can only do so much, but you have to fight, because for every child that you save, that's something. So what role did the social services play when the person came there? Didn't they realize what was going on?
I don't think they wanted to know. I don't think
they want, like a blind?
Kind of like dump and run.
Yeah, close their eyes.
Close their eyes to it, because, I mean, she should have realized, I mean, when they said it was hard to draw these children out, and the mother's looking at them with furtive glances, and they're just answering yes and no, and I mean, the story was there. They just didn't want to bother with it.
So what happened to these?
One,
this this what happens to this person? I mean, nothing happened to this person. In other words, some social services, she ignored it or whatever, and nobody did anything to countermand the fact that she did nothing to help you?
No, and it wasn't until we were entering high school when they didn't need our services anymore and wanted to sell the tobacco farm that they told us, you'll need to take us out of there. They didn't need us anymore. And but there was one family when we were 5 years mm-hmm. old, and I was mm-hmm. with my brother at the time, and we were hungry, and he went and broke into a cellar of a lady and stole some peaches. And he handed them out to me, but I was only a little over four, and the jar was too heavy for me, so it crashed to the floor. And I was so mm-hmm. happy that that woman caught him. And the fact that rather making amends with the neighbor and not saying anything about it, she called authorities. So the authorities did come, and thank mm-hmm. heavens for they did, because my sister and I, because of the abuse we had taken from those two teenage boys, we never would have lived. We never would have survived that. So that was one good thought where the mother did inform the authorities, and that did help us. That was like divine intervention, as I call it.
That's amazing. So what kept you going that you knew you weren't going to give up? And explain to everybody, the title of the book is called Stovepipe. For those people that have never read this book, you need to read it, because it really does tell you what happens when the foster care system fails and a lot of other things fail, and child abuse is definitely something that should be punishable by more than just jail. I mean, seriously, to me it's tantamount to committing a crime that's a lot more serious. Almost in some cases, it's murder. So this is a serious book. Could you explain to them why you titled it Stovepipe?
Well, since we were 7 and 9, that's when the family bought the tobacco farm, and we moved to a new farm. And there were two attic bedrooms up there, and they locked us away in the attic bedrooms. All we had was a bed. We sat on our beds all the time, two beds, and a stovepipe that went up through the that measured, gave us a certain amount of warmth mm-hmm. from the stovepipe. But other than that, and since we had absolutely no toys or no games to play with, nothing mm-hmm. at all, we'd become often bored and lonely. And the stovepipe was our connection to the outside world. When the foster man downstairs, foster parent, turned on the little radio we had sitting on his table, we would mm-hmm. all lie down belly flop beside the stovepipe with our ears mm-hmm. close to it without bumping our head on it, because we would have got beaten royally had we bumped it. So we would listen to the Hit Parade and the Red Skeleton and the Green Shadow stories that were popular, and that was mm-hmm. our connection to the outside world. And that was our enjoyment for the day, and we look forward to it every night, waiting for him to turn that radio on. So that's why I called the stovepipe, because it played and it warmed our. We used to iron our ribbons on it and dry our mittens and our gloves, and it was just a central part of our lives.
It's just so hard to believe that, you know, it's not hard to believe. You hear it in the news all the time that there are people out there that are so cruel that they don't realize how blessed they are, that they have foster children. They were getting money for this, correct? Because first the parents get a serve, they were getting money, and no one came to realize that the money wasn't being spent for what it was supposed to be spent. And when they came there, they didn't check to see your room or where you were staying.
They never checked our room. No. Yeah, as a matter of fact, we usually met them outside, and we were certainly told what to say and what not to say, severely threatened if we said anything out of the ordinary. So usually our answers were just a nod, or we looked at her to see what we were saying, what we could say. But I'm looking back, she had raised her family, mm-hmm. and she was forced to take us to put food on the table for them, because they got money for, we were like hired farm laborers, and they mm-hmm. would get money for people if they had to hire them. So we were actually their livelihood. And I think she resented it, the fact that she had to do this, and that's why they really didn't care for us, had no concern for our welfare or our happiness.
Yeah, but it's just so mind-boggling to think that these people came and saw that you were being used as human slaves, actually, is what you're saying. And no one was allowed to say anything. And today, it's some cases, you're right, it's not that much different. So how long did it take you to write this book? How long did it take you to put your story down? And do you get to see any of your family at all?
Well, the nice part of it, the nicest part of writing my story, it took me about 4 years to write it. And the reason I decided to write it, after I got my children's aid report and saw some of the lies and untruths that were in there, I thought about writing this story, but I had a business in my home and I was too busy, but it would cross my mind every once in a while. And finally, when I had frail surgery on my right hand, I could no longer do my business, I started doing finger therapy on my typewriter. And that's when that's when the story started coming to me that maybe I should write my story since I can't do my business now. So, and that's when I decided to do it. And some of the happiness came to me when I finished the story and was able to give it to my three sisters. We had a very, very strong bond. And they clutched the book to their chest, and they just cried and read the book and reread it and cried and reread it. And I think it was a catharsis for all of us to get this out of our system. Yeah. And, you know, we really had a difficult life growing up together. And I think being torn apart so many times and brought back together, no child in the world should have to have that untold grief like that. I mean, many adults don't ever have that type of grief.
No one should. Did they help you write part of this, or would they write their own story? Would they consider writing their part of it, or did they help you write this?
No, whenever I went home to see them, I lived in the United States and they lived in Canada. Whenever I went home to see them about once every 2 months, we'd get together and I'd let them know how my story's coming along. And if there's something I forgot a little bit, then they would fill me in on the details. So, yes, they did give me a hand.
Well, that is good. Because the goal of this book is a lot, not just what went through, but she wants to make people aware that the foster care system needs to be reworked in America. Foster care system needs to be, people need to protect our kids when they go into a home with strangers. And it is strangers, and it's difficult enough that they're being taken away for whatever reason from their parents. To be uprooted and then to be mistreated is absolutely, I mean, I can't come from a family where my mother never raised her hands and never yelled. We were just well behaved, but we weren't afraid. And that's the no child should be hit. I'm just sorry. That's just the way I feel. No child should be screamed at, yelled at, or made to feel as if they're nothing. And I know that when you go to school, you get teachers of all types too. And as an educator, I think the worst thing I ever heard was any teacher belittling or being rude or calling a child name. There's never a reason. So it's just amazing that you decided to write this. How does Kevin, because I love Kevin, you have to remember he's my very special friend, and when he sent me your book and Louise's book, he didn't say to me, Fran, do you want to read it? He just sent it. And I sat down, and like I said before to Louise, I read her book in one night, and then I read yours just about the same night.
Well,
I mean, I'm a speed reader, but I couldn't put either one of them down. And then I said, I had to figure out a way to get you both on the show. This is my new show. It's called Focus Discussions, and which talks about issues. And the issue today is the foster care system. So if there's anybody in the chat room that has a question or wants to ask Bonnie a question, feel free to type it in and log in.
Okay.
If you could thank one person, who would it be? And if you could speak to one person from your past and tell them what you really think, what would you tell them?
I'd probably go back and talk to my school teacher, Mrs. Linhart. She was the one that really encouraged me in my writing and my composition and my artwork. And I really loved her for it. And she was the one who wrote the note telling the family, which I never really found out what the note was until I received my children's aid reports. But she always encouraged me and made me feel good about myself. And that's why I would like to talk to her. As a matter of fact, I did go back. I located her and gave her a copy of the book.
Oh, that's great.
What did she say? And what did she say?
Oh, she was just so tickled. She walked out on her little walker. She was in a senior home, and she says, "You just made my day. You just made my day." So it was very wonderful. The other person I would like to talk to, I would like to talk to Mrs. Bender. I mean, I would like to find out why she treated us so cruelly, and why did she lock us in a room, and why did she just abandon us and let us go hungry? And what?
Me too.
What
I would love to ask her that question.
Yeah. That, yeah.
Have you promoted this on any local radio stations or any local television stations, or even with the foster care agencies? Have they, you know, has anybody read this besides myself and other people that you've given it to? What about the local television stations to get the word out? Because this is an issue that needs to be brought to light, and this book needs to be brought to light.
I think they have changed some of the rules now, I think. They're a little better. And I know that I had on my show Erin Mirren, who she was abused by a relative, but we have a law in Illinois now, the Erin Mirren law that Governor Quinn passed because she was instrumental in trying to get it passed, that kids could go to teachers in schools and talk to them, because you can't always go to your parents, because those might be the ones that are abusing the children. So that's her bill is coming. She goes, you know, she's been doing this all over the country to try to get these bills passed so teachers can, you know, have more relationship to try to see what's going on in someone's home, because that is usually where the problems are, and, you know, a lot of times in the home.
And
the kids are afraid.
Yes. As Rosie O'Donnell said, that the system is broken. It's like a barrel full of holes. Instead of plugging up the holes, we need a whole new system. And I do think, another thing I think parenting classes should be taught in school.
Absolutely.
And I do have a speaking engagement with the CASA Society, which is their children advocates. They speak for children to the court.
Oh, that's great.
So, of course, my husband and I are retired, so we're senior citizens, and we're a little computer illiterate, so we're trying to catch up on social networking and all that stuff.
They need people to go and speak and, you know, talk to other people, because speaking, you know, you can't do everything with the Internet. You have to have some kind of contact with people, because you don't get the full impact of the emotion on the computer.
No, you don't.
As you would. When they would listen to you and see what you've been through, that would make much more of an impact than somebody just writing it in a blog and saying, oh, this happened to me.
I'm sending letters out to schools that teach social services.
Yeah.
And I'd like to speak to those schools. And
that is a good idea. And there were special schools for children with special needs. Mm-hmm. I don't know about where you are, but here we have places called group homes where there are children that are difficult, that have been through what you've been through, and have, you know, maybe not to the gravity that you've been through it, but they have been. I have my niece, but she has a learning disability, and she does live in a group home, and kids need to know that there's somebody out there that's going to advocate for them.
Yes.
I know that in the public schools, when I was the dean, we had an advocate that came in to work with these children when they got in trouble, to teach them how not to get in trouble with peer mediation. Because a lot of times when children are beaten and they turn out like that, they turn out to be the discipline problems in the school. Not all the time, but sometimes. They feel, well, you know what, society doesn't really care about me, so why should I care about them? And this is what I'm going to turn out to be. So to speak at a children's advocacy thing is fantastic. And maybe if you tell them some of the stories and what you went through, even in schools and in local church groups, I think kids need to hear this story.
Definitely. From the people that it happened to. Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
And without a doubt. Would you ever consider turning it into a children's book, any part of it, and writing it as a children's book so that kids would want to read it, you know, water it down, but, you know, the message is there, what happens when you're in foster care? Or, you know, just call it Does Anyone Care? Or something like that?
That's a good idea. I know you write children's books, and I've often thought of writing children's books, too. So that's a good idea.
I wrote three because I was...
overweight when I was a kid, and everybody used to make fun of me, and I was a klutz, and they tried to bully me, but I, you know, Marcia knows I got a big mouth. It doesn't matter. Nobody ever got one over, Mommy. But I was always overweight, and I was a big klutz, and my sister, who passed away last year, was always, you know, graceful and whatever. She was my best friend, and it's like I lost part of me when she died last year, and it was it's in her memory that I wrote all of these books. My last book is based on true stories. It's called Faces Behind the Stone, and the first story is what I think happened to her. There's a message in each one. I think teens need to hear what you have to say.
Oh, definitely.
I think they need to understand the gravity of the situation. I think that kids need to understand that it's okay to tell. And that nothing's going to happen.
I think that's one of the problems we're afraid of.
Another thing that amazed me. Was when I did the book signing at Barnes & Noble. Quite a few men had read the story, and they said, you know, after I read the story, I gave it to my teenage kids to read.
Absolutely.
They felt that their kids had such a good home, and they were complaining, and they said, no reason to complain. But
you're so right. I mean, I think kids really
that
need.
Is true.
They need to read
Louise's
book about that, and your book. I mean, because then they actually would realize this is what happens when you're not lucky. This is what happens when out of nowhere you get taken away and snatched away, and this is what happens when you don't have such a great life. And I think I'm going to send this to my nieces in Florida, maybe.
And the sad thing is, as I heard on Bill O'Reilly the other night, with the so much drug abuse and the legalization of marijuana, more children are becoming neglected and abused. And the grim statistics are that 8 out of 10 kids aging out of the foster care system, roughly 25,000 a year, 80% end up dead, homeless, or in jail.
It's horrible. And if they had somebody to believe in them, it wouldn't happen. Right. If they had somebody to believe in them, that's all they really need, is someone to care about them and believe in them. And you don't have to be blood to love somebody.
No, you don't.
You can love a child.
And I would say children are our most precious commodity, and they should have that reason. They can sit on a shelf in a china cabinet, not buried in a basement.
In other words, when they age out, they're on their own, correct? At 18 years old?
That's 18.
They age
that's
out.
Too young. I think it should be 21.
I agree with you, and they don't look to see that they have a job or anything. So I remember that from your book, and you're saying that when you age out, that's it. They need to find some place to go. And you're right; they wind up either on the street, or if they're very very lucky.
But when you have a parole officer finds them jobs. So why can't other people find jobs before they need a parole officer?
Exactly.
I agree with you. There should be some kind of middle point over there in between 21 and 18, and they should have some kind of group place where they can, you know, where they can live. Unfortunately, the system works. Yeah, it's give them some kind of skill. So when you were going to school there or whatever, and you age out, these kids have no skills, is what you're saying, to do anything.
Right.
They're not trained.
That's right, and they go out in the world and they flounder, and they're lost.
Right.
And sometimes I think it's more happens to boys than girls. I don't know, maybe because they're a little more rebellious. But I've often read about the Emma Picklers in Hungary, and read about a woman that traveled all over the world, and she found that this place in Hungary called Emma Picklers was one of the best places for child care, where they had love and continuity in their lives. So I've been investigating that too. So anyway,
I think that you'll be very good out there, and if the schools will have you, it'll be very good, because I think this is right. This is why I have a lot of shows on my show that are issues too, because I feel that, you know, if nobody talks about it, nothing ever gets done, you know, and you have to, and now with, you know, the internet and radio, this is really very good, because this is a lot, even though we all write books, this is where people actually hear things, where it sinks in sometimes, because these, you become real. If you're reading a book, sometimes it's not all, you know, you don't know if it's reality, but you're listening to the people talk about their lives, then you realize that this can happen to people, and it might be happening to people next door to you. You don't even know. Nobody knows what's in someone's house. So you sometimes have to be a little aware.
But I think coming from my... From my shoes, I if I see child abuse, I report it right away, and I
you have to
sometimes for abusing their children. But Yeah, I hope my book accomplishes something that I hope if anyone reading my book, if it can help other children from falling through the cracks of the foster care system, then I think it's done a good thing.
Well, but I think maybe you should present a copy of this to the guidance counselors of every school.
Yeah.
I think when you go to the Children's Advocacy Center, because they probably do have a thing with schools, you might want to ask them, would you present this to the guidance counselors of your school? Because they would be the ones that deal with the children that go through this. I mean, I had a child come into my reading group. I was a reading and writing specialist, and she said to me, look at my Black and Blues, my father did that. I said, stay where you are. I'm on. And I had two cell phones, one to call parents and one to call whatever. And I called the guidance counselor. I said, you got 3 seconds to get up here. You have to report. I mean, I was in the pizza parlor before I moved, and I saw this lady talking to her children. And I never say anything to strangers. And I looked at her and I said, if you lay a hand on that child while I'm sitting here, I'm calling 911. You are an abusive parent. And I swear, it was like right before I moved in November. And she looked at me. I said, you are an abusive mother. And I know that you don't come from this country. I said, because people in this country don't do that. I said, you came from wherever. I said, how dare you sit in this place and threaten to beat your son? Because why? Because he was upset. He doesn't feel good, and you're going to hit him? Yeah. She just looked at me, and she just stopped. I said, I don't know what you're going to do when he leaves here. I said, but I could tell you now, while I'm sitting here, you're not going to hit him. Because I'm going to die on 911. And I know it took a lot out of me, but you know what? You as an educator, and you know, you've seen it all. You felt the pain. You felt it all. So do you ever go on?
I was in a store one day where a man's waiting for waiting to be waited on. He's smoking a cigarette, and this little boy is sucking his thumb. He bent down, and he smacked the thumb out of his mouth, and says, "I told you, you don't suck your thumb." I said, excuse me, sir, but what are you doing with a cigarette in your mouth? Is that not your pacifier? It's causing you more harm. It's thumb.
That's actually very good. Yeah. That's
good
true. It's absolutely true. You don't even think about that, but that's right. Exactly.
Do you find that a child that comes from an abusive home turns out to be an abusive parent, too?
No, I do not. As a matter of fact, my teacher, my children tell me that I was always overprotective of them. And it angers me when I hear that, because I don't think that's true at all.
Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. And you know what's scary is that sometimes these kids feel that, and depending on the parent, that they deserve what they got. Oh, you did something wrong. I was bad. And basically, they don't deserve it.
That's
they don't deserve. No one deserves to be hit, and no one deserves to be abused. But there's all types of abuse, not just physical. There's mental. There's physical. There's a sexual. There's all sorts of abuse that kids go to. And I think the worst kind is verbal abuse. When you make them feel as if they're small. There are groups out there, I'm sure, and when you go to speak to these people on Friday for Children Advocacy, they must have specific groups or organizations or something that deal with them where you could probably speak, which would really be great.
Yes. I'm probably not the best public speaker, but I will learn as I go
along. You're doing fine.
I think you will be. I think you will be, because when you're standing there and someone asks you a question, you're going to answer them, and that you'll be fine.
If you can give a message to the world, what would you tell them? What would your message be to tell everybody?
That when you bring children in this world, that remember that you are bringing them into this world for a purpose, and they deserve a happy childhood. They are our most precious commodity, and that being a child should not have to be painful. And
that's wonderful.
And they need good memories. And I think every little child deserves a good, memorable childhood.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, sometimes with a child, I think I was talking about this on one of my shows a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about, sometimes a child remembers even a small gesture that we think is not the biggest deal, but they remember it as such a big deal, and it's interesting to hear what they think. It's not about what you've given them or things like that. It's sometimes something you've done, and they remember it as a child, because we all have memories of different things. And you're right, good memories are absolutely, your whole life is better when you have good memories.
Yeah. I think your good memories come from what parents give and what parents do with you, not what you give them. If you give them all kinds of things, it doesn't mean anything.
Yes.
How you play with them and how you help them is more important.
Just being there. Just being there to talk to them. Because, you know, and I try to tell people that sometimes, you know, it's not a bad idea for a parent to sometimes think back to their childhood, and then they might remember that they might have done some of these things too. You know, it's like, you know, kids repeat themselves year after year. You know, years go on, but still some of the things that kids do are the same as we always did.
Right. And I think sometimes we have a tendency to spoil our children by giving them too many toys to play with and taking away their own creativity.
Yeah.
I know that
growing up, I didn't have a lot of toys because I didn't want toys. I wanted books.
Yes.
So I think till this day, yeah, my mother would say to me, what would you like? You know, do you want this or that? And I'd go, just give me some books. Just let me go to the library and let me read. And I was happy. Or, you know, she would say, you got all A's in school. Do you want to stay up late? And, I think I'll stay up late and read a book. Or I'll do something. She was very education-oriented. So things don't mean a lot to me. And that's why I think the problem is today with kids, too. It's things
My father would say to me, like, you know, a gift is a gift and be happy with whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I grew up that way and I still feel that way. It's like some people go, it's not good enough. I mean, that was never with how we were brought up. We were always brought up that whatever it was, it's the thought that counts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it doesn't have to
be.
But to me, I agree with you. To me, spending Sunday with my father that was working like seven days a week and just going to Coney Island and going on, you know, playing bumper cars and, you know, or just playing golf or just spending the day with my dad and my parents and my sister was better than going anywhere in the world and, you know, and all the money in the world and all the presents in the world. I mean, I don't know about parents today or back then, but I know that when a child gets good grades, all my father ever said to me was, I'm very proud of you. And that was enough. You know, to give somebody $10 because they got an A in school, you don't pay kids for good grades. They're supposed to get them because they're supposed to do well in school. So before I forget, where can everybody get your book?
Yeah, we're
Where can we get Stovepipe and what is your website that we can get it?
I did want to tell you now that since my book has come out and we've been promoting it in Canada, because it's hard to
get
an American author book over into Canada, but we've been taking it over there and giving it to my families and they've circulated it around. Well, tomorrow I'm going home to meet two brothers and a sister that I've never met before and didn't know I had.
Fantastic.
So,
that's so nice. You have to write that story.
Great.
Kind of exciting to see that.
That's very exciting. Oh, my God.
Yes. And I have to tell one more funny thing. Our name was Mudford. Our sisters, there were four sisters. We were called the Mudford twins. Or often we were called Mud Turtles, which makes me laugh because we were kind of like a turtle. We had a big shell over us, and when we get through, we were careful we put our head in. So I always thought that was funny.
Well, how did you find them? How did you know that you didn't know them? How did you know? How did they get to you?
I beg your pardon?
How did you find these, your brother?
They read my book. One of my brothers read my book, and I came up to my computer one day, and I said, "Hi, my name is Diane. I just wanted to tell you the story. My father is your brother." And then she wanted to tell me a little bit about their lives. So I'm kind of going to get to meet them.
I got the chills. God, that's terrific. Oh, my God.
You have to tell Kevin to contact Book Pleasures. And Book Pleasures is, I review for them, but so they won't let me review it again, or I could just pretend that I didn't review it the first time. Book Pleasures is run by a man by the name of Norm Goldman, and he's in Canada. And, yes, he's in Canada, and he'll put it out to 50 or 60 people to review.
Yeah, because it's not that easy sometimes to get it out there.
Yeah, well,
because
he's not
Canadian.
Yeah, someone will take it, I can guarantee. Someone will take it because he puts it out there. You have to just tell, I'll email Kevin, or you just tell Kevin to contact Book Pleasures to put in the thing. They'll contact Kevin. Kevin would send the book to the person, and then they would put the review out on Book Pleasures. And, the people on Book Pleasures are really good reviewers. I know because I'm one of them. And,
that's good.
Yeah, I review for Kevin because I like Kevin and because he sends me good stuff, and I never know what he's going to send me or when it's going to show up or where it's going to be. I just okay. find it. But Stovepipe was really one of those books that, you know, left an impression on me, and so did So Far to Run. So on behalf of myself and Marcia, we want to thank you so very, very much.
Yes.
And I'd be interested to see if you can turn this into a children's book so that kids would know, you know, what goes on in the foster care system and, you know, about bullying and stuff like that. I said it to Louise, too, because, you know, kids need to read this. And if you put it in the form of a children's book or a YA teen book, you know, the foster care system, about a little girl that goes through it, maybe not as graphic, but they'll understand. Maybe that would get the point in also.
Yeah. And you asked me where the book could be purchased?
Yes. Where can everybody get it?
You can get it on my website, BonnieBRag.com, also Amazon.com, and Amazon Canada, and also at Barnes & Noble.
Oh, that's great.
So you're on Amazon Canada. That's why. That's a good thing. I'm having, actually, you know, next week I'm having a, Carlene Bradford, she's coming on next Tuesday night, and she's a Canadian author. So I'll ask her before the show, you know, some questions about that,
And it's
because
also
she's coming on
e-book.
Do you, is your book an e-book?
Yes.
And you know what? Talk to Kevin. Maybe he can do something on Amazon for Kindle to put on a free weekend so that people could buy it for free. We'll lower the price. See if it's on Kindle Prime, then people can get it for free on Kindle Prime and just download it and read it and get the message out there. But I do think that guidance counselors and principals and youth groups, and I don't know about out by you, but here we have the Explorer program. The police have it. I think that police stations, police people, the people that work with youth groups in police stations should have a copy of Stovepipe because I think kids need to know you know, what could happen.
Yeah, and I think what you said before about a children's book, because if you make it into a small children's book, I think those are particularly the ones that need to hear this because they're scared. They really are so scared sometimes.
You can't be afraid to talk up, and you can't be afraid to report. And as a teacher and an educator, anybody listening, you need to be more vigilant, and principals need to be more vigilant. And you cannot be afraid to say that this happened. I know I must have reported child abuse teaching for 36 years in the New York City public school system. I can't tell you how many times I did, and unfortunately, I was never wrong. I was glad that I did report it because you know you save a life. You save quite a few of them.
I was a person, and when I went online and signed all my Stovepipe book, I said to my husband, I feel like the emperor in his new clothes. I was just, this book was really exposed everything, but and it did cause me some pain to write it. But after all, I'm glad I did.
If a few people, it saves a few people from going through misery like you did, then you've done a great job.
Yes.
Thank you so very, very much.
Yes, thank you
This was a memorable show. This is my first show called Focus Discussion. It's not my first radio show. I do book discussion, but this is the first show on the new the first show on the new network. I wanted to go in big, and I did.
Yeah,
we did.
Very good
show.
Yes, very good show. I like that.
Thanks for your encouragement.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
For your encouragement
and
enthusiasm.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
We're going to be back on March 15th with Sheldon Leonard and Rhonda Johnson. And Rhonda's book is about her struggle being deaf and blind and what she went through in life. And her story could be quite interesting. And his story is quite different also. It's a sci-fi story, but there's a whole bunch of messages in there. So, Marcia, anything else you want to add?
Well, I think that's it because we're having, you know, Virginia has a show, and we continue to keep having shows, and people can look at World of Ink Network, and today we were featured, so that's a good thing, so hopefully this will get out to a lot of people, and it's been really great since Virginia and I have been doing this, and now we welcome you today, and so I think this should be a very good show for people to hear, because these are things that people sometimes don't realize are out there, and I think we need to do things. I feel good about this when you're trying to help do something like this, because I think that kids need to hear these things. no matter what. I mean, even kids that don't have it, because they have friends that have had abuse, you know, and maybe they've seen it when they're at their friends' houses.
Good.
Yeah, you do, and abuse is something that isn't excusable. There is no excuse for child abuse or any woman that goes and gets beaten. There's no excuse for anyone to be abused ever. And I mean, and I dealt with my mom had Alzheimer's and she was home, and elder care abuse is just as bad. And that's
there should be never anything like that, right?
Anything like that, yeah. I mean, I'm an advocate for elder care abuse and for the elderly, and I've done an awful lot. So, on that note, I want to thank you, Bonnie.
That's why we can have these shows, right? Because I took care of my mother for 8 years. And that's the thing. You know, we, besides being writers, we have our own beliefs, and we try to, you know, put people on shows that actually will, you know, because I've learned something on almost every show I've done. I really, I think you do different. We have different people on. Everybody's different, and we learn new things.
Yes, I know. And you never know who's going to be on our show.
It's interesting.
Well, Bonnie, if you write the next one, I will have you on. We will have you on again.
I want
to be the first one to read it and give you those five stars.
Okay.
I'm writing that down right now.
Wish you luck.
Because Bonnie's book is a five-star brand.
A good show, Fran and Sandra. We're waiting for you to come back. And Sandra will probably be on Tuesday night with me. Mine's at 9
o'clock. She'll be on Tuesday with me also. We're going to have RJ Ellery, everybody, from England.
She has a busy day Tuesday. All right. Thank you all very much for listening.
Thank you.
And Fran,
thank
it'll
you.
Be a pleasure
my
to have you
back
next month.
Thanks,
goodbye.
Bonnie.
All right. Take care, Bonnie. Thank you so
much. Bye-bye. Love you both. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. So we're going to end it. Is that it, Fran?